Welcome to the Horsewise podcast with Lynn Reardon, where we share stories of horses and people and what they teach each other. On today's episode, I have Brooke Tatro and Alicia Landman discussing the topic of how to prepare mentally for working with our horses. I hope you enjoy the show and have a wonderful day. Hi, everyone. I'm Lynn Reardon, the host of the podcast and head coach at Horsewise. On today's episode, I have another great discussion with Brooke Tatro and Alicia Landman. Alicia chose the topic for this discussion, and it's a really good one. And it's on how do we mentally prepare for working with our horses. She draws a distinction between horse nerves and people nerves, and how sometimes we, as the people in the equation, we might be rushing from work or from maybe a stressful situation at home or just maybe a lot of traffic. And how do we kind of set that aside to work with our horses? From that initial topic, Brooke and Alicia and I then went into a longer kind of freeform conversation about different ways we can learn more about our own style of learning, about the horse's style of learning, whether it's from, you know, personality tests or understanding your general chemistry with certain kinds of horses. And it was just, for me, a really cool way to talk through some of the strategies we use and that we then apply to ourselves so that we can, in turn, maybe help horses and students better. And I always like to make the comment that Brooke and Alicia have so much greater skill than I do in these areas. So even though I've been doing this for a long time, I've done it primarily in terms of charity work. So I really only have been working more or less professionally as a teacher in the last few years. So when I talk with them, I always feel like the, you know, 18-year-old rookie that gets to be with the really awesome professionals. And so for me, these conversations have been super helpful to improve myself as a teacher and as a rider and as someone who aspires, you know, to be a horseman. So I hope you enjoy our discussion. I learned a lot from it, and I thought it was really enlightening to see the areas where we could share experiences and then also kind of learn from each other. I feel so fortunate to have Brooke and Alicia on the podcast regularly, and I hope you enjoy this discussion as much as I did.
So, hey, hi, Brooke and Alicia. It's great to have you back again, and I'm looking forward to talking with you both. I know that Alicia had this great topic for tonight's discussion, so I'm going to be a super lazy podcast host, and I'm going to let her open with that topic for us to discuss.
All right. Well, hopefully you guys can hear me. I know it was cutting in and out a little bit earlier, but thank you for having us on again. And yeah, this just kind of came up today. I mean, it's been in the back of my mind for a little bit of how there's horse nerves and then there's people nerves. And I really feel like there's many ways to help with that. But a really important piece of it is not even involving our horses. It's just involving our own ability to self-reflect and understand where we are at in our life and what type of baggage are we bringing to the horse before we've even touched the horse, and checking in with, you know, what's our heart rate like and what are we, where's our mind at and what are we thinking about before we even halter our horse. And, you know, we've all heard those studies of how horses can sync up their heart rate with another horse and how a human heart and a horse heart, I mean, they can feel what we're thinking and how we feel emotionally. And so that's just something that's been, you know, kind of in my mind, I thought might be fun to talk about. And yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
I think that's a great topic, and it tracks a lot for me with body language. So I don't typically think about, most of the time in my work with horses, I don't think about videoing myself or having photos taken. I just kind of get in there with the horse or with the student, and that's it, you know? And but I went through this phase, I'm still in it, where last few years where I've been videoing, and then maybe people have been photographing me more. They're really photographing the horse, but I'm kind of in there. And what that taught me was something about my body language that I had not realized, which is when I'm really concentrating, just one example, when I'm really concentrating, I tend to hunch my shoulders and lean forward. And I worked for many years in a traditional office setting. So if I was working on a big project, that's exactly what I would do, is I would kind of hunch over and lean in to kind of stare at the computer more to concentrate. And I realized that that was really affecting my breathing. And you could see it in the horses. It wasn't like I was holding my breath and going to pass out, but I was, you know, when you sort of slouch, you are constricting your ability to breathe fully. You have to open up kind of your sternum a little bit. And then leaning forward, the same thing. That can also seem, for a horse that's more nervous, maybe just a tad predatory, right? I'm kind of leaning forward. Depends if the horse is super touchy, obviously, most horses. So I just bring that up because I had not realized how much my mood and my breathing and just my general, maybe like you said, emotional state, mindset was reflected in my body posture in ways that I had never paid attention before. They weren't crazy obvious. It wasn't like I was scuttling around, you know, with my head all down where people would think I was odd, but how those small things are such big signals to horses. And so I think it's a fascinating topic to discuss.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about this today, and I've got a friend that Michelle Conkle is her name, and she's been riding with me for many years now. And she's a therapist, you know, that's her main job. And she also works in equine assisted therapy. And so I've just been trying to get to know her business better and understand, you know, she's just really talented at what she does. And so we kind of did a mock thing today where we took the, I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong, but the Enneagram, you know, test.
Oh, yeah.
Have you ever taken that?
I have not, but I've heard of it.
I'll send you and Brooke the link. I think it's really cool, like from a teacher perspective, to kind of answer all those questions and understand like what number am I and what you know, what drives me and what type of person am I by nature. And knowing that about yourself then kind of helps you relate to other people too, and understanding like what type of person are they, like what drives them. And and so anyways, we just got to talking about that today, and then just hanging out with the horses and then thinking about you know, how that affects you when you go to a horse or even in a teaching situation, how you could help a student get through some nervousness. And obviously knowing how, you know, the fundamentals and kind of going through the motions of understanding how to direct a horse is going to bring you some calm, but sometimes you can't get in a calm state if you aren't just doing some deep breathing beforehand or, you know, something like that. And horses for me have always made me relax by nature. Like I don't, even if they're a hot mess, I just seem to get like in the zone, and I don't ever feel like they've rattled me too much. Maybe a few along the lines have, but it's just a cool thing to start on a personal level for me to start thinking more about and how I can help students, you know, get the most out of their sessions with their horses.
For sure. What about you, Brooke?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting topic because I think that, you know, life is busy and stressful. And I think we go through our day pretty unaware, maybe, of a lot of things that are happening inside of us. And I think that's one of the great thing about horses is that they, you know, if you're trying to get good at this and understand it, mm-hmm. it does make you reflect and be more self-aware, because you learn pretty quickly, you know, that is affecting them. And so I think it helps us with the horses and just in life as in general, because once you start to become self-aware around the horses, then obviously that bleeds over into every part of our life. And there are going to be emotions, you know, we are going to feel different ways on different days, and that's okay. But if we can be aware of it and calm ourselves a little bit and kind of come into neutral, you know, before we ride, it certainly does help. And it's funny because I actually had a conversation with my friend Natasha today after her lesson, just talking about like overthinking, you know, while we're riding too, even if we're focused on what we're doing, how just the overthinking part of it sometimes has a negative effect. And I know I've had this conversation with Alicia before on like that fine line of like trying hard without trying too hard. Do you know what right. I mean? Like
I do.
You are oh, trying to get better and to do well and to, you know, be aware and do those things. But if you're trying so hard, you're overthinking and it can be rough. So yeah, it's interesting that, you know, we all kind of had those similar conversations, you know, today. And yeah, I think it's an important part of it. And I do know a lot of people that, you know, have high stress jobs or lives, or have a lot going on. And, you know, the barn is supposed to be our sanctuary from the world. That's kind of how I look at it. It's like supposed to be the place that we go to for peace and fun and learning. And it's really hard for people to turn all that off. You know, they can't just like walk in the barn and flip a switch. You have to be aware and have some sort of thing that works for you to let that go, you know, either on your drive there or whatever works. Everybody's going to have a different way probably of doing that, but it's not an easy thing to do. You know, life's not easy all the time, so it's hard to put that stuff aside. But like I said, hopefully that's the good thing about the horses, is that they make us aware that we need to learn how to do that in a lot of parts of our life.
Yeah, agreed. And one part of this study that I thought was really interesting, and was, I don't know where the study took place, and I'll try to find out who exactly did it, but they put heart rate monitors on the horse and on the human, and then they told everybody what they were going to do. They said, okay, you're going to start at this end of the arena, and you're going to walk to that end of the arena, and you're going to stop. Pretty simple, right? And then, so they had them do that once, and they measured the heart rate, and then they did it again. But just before they walked off, in their earpiece, somebody said, okay, now somebody's about to open an umbrella at that end of the arena. And the heart rate of the human walking the horse changed. And then the heart rate of the horse changed because of the anticipation of what might go wrong, right? And so as that person walked to the other end, they never opened an umbrella. But to see the difference in the way that the human was able to, you know, because this was a horse that was impressionable. And but I think when it comes to a lot of people that we are maybe helping that have younger horses and all that, we're always working on the horse. We're always working on the horse. But, you know, like as Ray would always say, you're working on yourself, you know. And I think that study would be really cool to dive in a little deeper to and figure out, you know, some more pieces to that equation. But if people see that, if they learn that a little bit more in their lessons and in what they're doing or trying to get a horse to do, they can reflect quite a bit on how much their emotions play into the success or the failure of their session with their horse, you know? So
that makes total sense to me. Yeah. Well, and go ahead, Brooke.
Oh, I was just going to add to that. The cool thing is that now they can actually, like, we have the ability to do studies. I had a talk with our chiropractor, acupuncture, like holistic vet, and he goes to all these, you know, conferences all over the place where now they can actually measure your energy field, you know, around your body, like your, and that he said it's always really interesting to talk to horse people about it, because it's like, you guys already know. He's like, but science is just kind of catching up, and how your actual vibration, your actual energy reaches like 2 to 3 feet out of from your body. So like when we're all standing next to each other, whether it's us humans or us in the horse or us in the dog or whatever, our energy fields are literally mixing, right? They're literally having contact with each other. And I just think it's cool that science is kind of, you know, because it wasn't that long ago that was all kind of foofy, you know, if you believed in that or not. And now they're, you know what I mean? Now science is like having the ability to kind of catch up on that sort of thing. So maybe that'll help people also have like a better understanding of how you affect the other beings around you, whether it's, you know, the horses or the people that you, you know, come in contact with, that we really are sharing energy, literally, you know, and how we're affecting each other, you know? Yeah. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah. We that this morning, like where, you know, you close your eyes and someone is at a distance where you can't feel that they're there. And then they get a little closer and, you know, your eyes are closed, but you can feel that they're there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's so fascinating, like just how powerful that really is. And like when we shape a horse on a circle, or we even ask them to bend from our leg, you know, like how much power we really do have to do very little to get those things to take place because of that field of energy, you know. And like we always talk about like pushing on a pillow of air, you know, but like how often do sometimes people just come in with a kick, you know, and they never got the chance. The horse never got the chance to feel like that real subtle thing. And yeah, I'm still working on that every day, but
it's talking about presence, you know, which it makes sense that is actually something that you could measure, you know. It just isn't something that maybe, like you said, it takes a little while for the scientific ability to detect it comes up. And mm-hmm. I don't think about it so much as foofy, because it's so practical. If you're in the natural world with animals, presence is the main thing. Unless you have a dog who's a companion animal and is trained to verbal commands, you know, things that are natural and out in the wild, they're not going to respond to our witty reply. You know, they're going to respond more to our presence, right? Our verbal skills mean nothing to them than in the truly natural world. And while our horses are in many ways companion animals, right? We talk to them and so forth. The most effective form of communication that we can offer them is something that is understandable to them. And our body is the first thing that they're reading. And our body reflects every aspect of what we are thinking and feeling in that moment on a very micro level. And that's not, I don't think that means you have to be perfectly Zen. You just have to be aware. And the thing I've always noticed and heard is that it's when you really try to hide what you're feeling in a really obvious way, like that's when horses freak out a little bit, because they're like, I don't understand why you're pretending to be firm when you really don't feel firm, right? You feel scared or whatever. And I just want to relate two stories about presence. Both of them are from about, one's a long time ago, one's about 5, 6 years ago. I was in a clinic, and the pattern of this clinician was that, you know, we'd all be kind of warming up and then there'd be some music playing and then we would come in, and it was Buck, right? So that was sort of the pattern. And it was a big class, as it usually is. And I was talking to some friends, and there were a couple horses that were nervous, and my horse was a little jumpy, not bad, but, you know, and it's just kind of that, you know, people are kind of warming up and there's the music and you're starting to notice what horses might, you know, be a little nervous. How's your horse gauging it? And I'm talking to my friend, and then I could feel all the horses in the arena get kind of steady. And I'm like, oh, Buck must have come in. And I turned around, and he'd ridden in kind of quietly to the group, and all the horses were like, oh, Buck's here. But it wasn't like anything super obvious. It's just something that you could feel, because we were all in that moment, us and the horses, we were kind of building our own little herd. So, you know, it was really cool to experience that. And the other story is from way back when I was first doing this work with the thoroughbreds. And we would do mixed herds then. We would have mares with the geldings. And one gelding, who happened to be my gelding, unfortunately, we had put a mare in who was pretty mellow, and she got along fine with the other geldings, but my gelding decided to lose his mind over her. I mean, just ridiculous. Like he was doing all the wrong things. Let's just put it that way. He was chasing her around and he was agitated. He was trying to pick fights with the other geldings. So I'm like, okay, that's it. So I went and got her. I was going to take her out and put her elsewhere. And he's charging down the fence line at us. Like, and I had her lead rope in one hand in the gate. And I just straightened my body. I just looked at him like, don't even. And he stopped. Like, it was like the sliding stop. And he's like, never mind. But I didn't raise my hand. I didn't say anything. I was just like, last nerve, bro. Don't even come into this bubble. Like, don't. And the mare's like, she kind of cuddled up behind me like, yeah, that's right. You stay away. But I didn't do anything, right? And I had a helper with me, and she's like, what did you do there? Like, was that like a mind ninja thing? And I'm like, it was just a no. Like I was like, I don't know. You just can't come here. Like, don't do it. So that was like when I was first starting to understand how very powerful that can be. Yet it's not magic. It's actually just the way when you learn to direct your presence, it's very straightforward, right? And, it's just sort of the finding of it that takes the time, the awareness, like you guys are saying, that we have that. And I do think it's really difficult if you've been essentially living and working in your head all day. You know, you have a stressful job, right? And it involves maybe being indoors on a computer, constantly in meetings, whatever it is. And then to come to the barn and expect to turn that off is hard. It's almost like you need a little decompression chamber or, you know, whatever. Maybe you listen to certain music or whatever it is that works for you as an individual to sort of shed that for a moment and find out what's really going on kind of underneath that. And I think it's hard for people that those feel weird to build those. It's almost ritualistic, right? You know?
Yeah, and I think too, it helps.
Oh, go ahead, Brooke. Sorry, I cut you off.
No, it's okay. I was just going to say, I feel like it helps to be around people that have the right energy too, because I feel like I've always been a little sensitive to people's energy. And so I feed off of it a little bit. So like when I'm around people that make me feel calm and confident and good, like it really makes a big difference. So whether it's like somebody like, you know, Buck, who's very calm and confident, or just like my friend Alicia, you know, like when we start cults together, I feel like I have like 100 times more confidence than I do sometimes when I'm by, do you know what I mean? When I'm by myself, it's just like you,
right back,
it helps to surround yourself with people that, you know, feed you good energy, and then hopefully you can learn to be that for other people too, right? So for like your students who are nervous or stressed or whatever, you can learn to feed them the right kind of energy as well, you know. So yeah, I think that's a big part. That's been a big part of it for me too, is just being around the right kind of energy, you know, helps me quite a lot.
Well,
sorry, go ahead, Alicia.
And thinking about how that kind of leads into like what we were talking about next, which is, you know, was it horse purchasing or like finding horses and all that stuff, and how how vital that is to the success or failure of the partnership, that if the horse is not knowledgeable enough to be able to handle a person who has a lot of anxiety or nervousness or whatever it might be. And unfortunately, it's those types that sometimes are like, I want to go get a 2-year-old, you know? And it's like, oh, this, you know, this might be a bit much for you because you can't really control your own self with an aged horse. So right. If you control yourself with that horse that is already very knowledgeable, 1000% do not go out and get the one that needs you to really be the calm and needs you to be the, you know, the one that's going to help answer all their problems and make them feel good. So I think that's a part that I think in the future, like I want to explain more to people when they're looking for horses and just be like, hey, you know, come get on this really gentle broke horse. And how do you feel internally? Are you like
right.
really right now? Or are you headspace? Because if you're a headspace, it's only going to get like 1,000 times worse when you have a horse that's looking for answers from you.
Yeah.
Did your friend, oh, go ahead, Lynn.
No, you go ahead, Brooke.
I was just going to ask Alicia, your therapist friend, did she have like methods or examples of ways to get yourself in a better space? Like if you are feeling stressed or moody or tired, I mean, it could be a million things, right? You know,
we just started to touch on it. And I think, you know, like Michelle and I, we've been talking about, you know, doing more of this kind of stuff together just because, you know, I'm curious in it and I think it's going to make me a better teacher. But breathing exercises, you know, and while we were doing the breathing exercises, I was like, holy crap, I need to breathe more. Like,
yeah,
I mean, even right now, like as we're talking, when I get like excited and you know, motivated about something, then sometimes I find myself not taking a full breath all the way into the back side of my body and like really filling up my lungs with air and then releasing it out in a way that, you know, you start to think clearer, you start to regulate your heart rate, and you also just feel better because you're breathing deeper, and our horses feel that. So we talked about it, and like it was all about the inhale. You think of going up the side of a square and then the long exhale to the next side of a square and then down, and you repeat that until you feel yourself kind of come back into your own body, I guess. I just played with it a little bit today, you know, with the younger horse, and like when he got really distracted, and how if I just took a minute and I did a little bit of that, like what a difference it makes, because it allows you to have permission to just get still for a moment. And I know sometimes when you're riding a young horse, you just gotta react and move and kind of flow with them. But there comes a point too where we can try to move too quick through a lot of stuff just to try to check the boxes off. And it's not necessarily at all what the horse needs, you know? So breathing is a huge piece of it. And I'm sure there's a lot more, which I'm going to learn. So.
I mean, it's basically like meditation, right? I mean, that's what a lot of forms of meditation are, just breathing exercises, basically, where, you know, not only are you slowing your heart rate and filling your lungs, but because you're concentrating on the breathing, then it's also clearing your mind, right? And settling the they call it monkey mind, which I think is a good name for it. You know, settling the monkey mind and going on up there.
I like the idea that too, that the breathing, it's something simple you can do, that if you're on the horse or if you're on the ground with the horse, that you don't, it doesn't require anything other than your awareness and kind of noting that and changing the rhythm. So like you have to stop and take notes or get in the lotus position on the saddle, you know, it's just this sort of checking back in. Right. When I get excited, I still hold my breath a little bit. I don't mean to. It's just like being, like I'm really excited to be here. And so I have found that the breathing exercises help me. And I've heard of the square and done that too sometimes and really liked it. I always forget about it, right? You forget about it for a few months. But I think that's something that's really cool. And then maybe visualizations too, just sort of simple things. It sounds like we need to have her on the podcast. I think it would be fun to talk through some of these different options with someone like her, you know, who professionally helps people. And I think that would be really interesting too, you know, because I'm always curious about how do I get my mind quiet. You talk about monkeys. I have a circus in there. There's a lot. There's multiple monkeys, and they're doing tricks, and they got they've got glitter on. There's a lot happening in there. Yeah. So I'm very aware of that. You know. So yeah. I think it's a great topic, and you don't have to feel like there's something wrong with you to practice it. I think some people maybe feel like, well, you know, you're telling me, Lynn, that I'm a nervous freak as a student, and that's why you're having me breathe. And it's like, no, I need to breathe, you know, and I'm actually inviting you to join me. Like concentration and focus, you can always improve that. And learning more about how to do that can enhance everything, right? All of the awareness.
Well, yeah. And who doesn't want to feel more peaceful? You know, who on this planet doesn't want to feel more at peace?
Yeah, and that's like
on a more consistent.
That's like a huge motivator for me right now. Just like, I don't know, just we're always trying to improve, you know, ourselves so we can help the horses improve, and the more self-reflecting we can do with, you know, like knowing what number I am, that I am, and I always knew this about myself, that I'm more of a peacemaker. You know, I like things to feel peaceful. I don't always know how to get there, but I know that's what I want in my life, you know, and I don't personally love, you know, conflict but knowing that about myself, and then being able to help other people understand why something might be hard for them, you know. And I think that's where Michelle will bring a lot of enlightenment to things that I struggle with certain students, you know. And it's, we all don't think the same, and we all don't have the same experiences that have formed us. So to be able to step into, like, just look at it with some perspective and empathy too, and understand that, like, everybody's just trying to get better, but sometimes we don't always know how to get better. we need somebody else to help us get there, you know? And as long as we're open-minded to it, I just think that we'll only keep improving our horses by working on ourselves. So.
For sure. And absolutely. I think too, it can be a way to help people maybe, I mean, I do this with myself for sure, where you have a horse that is jumpy or maybe is not responding the way you thought it would. And it seems like it's a little bit agitated, whatever the word might be. And it's normal maybe for a student to feel anxious about that, or even a teacher, depending on the degree of responsiveness you're getting from the horse. And if you can remind the student, hey, we don't know entirely his context, you know, we want to help this horse feel better, understand what's the right way to adapt to this horse. There's principles. No matter how troubled the horse is, he can't sit in your lap. So that's a no. Like, we have these hard principles, right? But within that, like, there's many ways to offer things to a horse. Even the same technique, you can offer that in different ways, or the same aid you can offer in different ways. And so to relate it to the person, like, this horse isn't freaking out or acting aggressively. It's just having it's confused, or it's having a certain, you know, series of responses, just like you were having the last time you were here. And so we're just going to do the same thing with the horse that you would do for yourself, which is to try to understand what is the way to adapt to that horse that would be helpful to that horse, and put it in that context rather than, you aren't perfect, you don't have perfect control of your mind, and therefore the horse isn't doing what you want. It's more like, hey, the horse there's a confusion and misunderstanding. It just like you would maybe be compassionate with yourself or want someone to understand how your type of personality needs to learn. You can do that for your horse too. Even if it means that, well, at this moment, maybe I would like my teacher to work with the horse so I can watch because I feel a little nervous. That even that's a lot better than I just feel like, oh, this is so overwhelming, or I did something wrong, or I don't understand. And it's like, oh, we'll just break it down the way you would for yourself or for your child, you know?
That's right.
Yeah. And I've noticed, like, in the last few years, as I learned to take I call them like little timeouts.
Is
I've learned to take little timeouts for myself, you know, whether it be 30 seconds or 5 minutes or whatever, when I feel myself getting whatever emotion, that I found that a lot of the horses do well with a little timeout too, you know, because I guess the insecurity or just, you know, kind of what maybe we've been taught a lot is, okay, when they get really nervous, you know, you just have to give them something constructive to do, which is good advice, you know, for sure. But there's been a few horses in the recent past where I've realized that, like, they just need a timeout for a second, you know, like they just need to maybe just go stand and like chill and take a breath and relax. And then let's head back in and go to work. And how much it's helped, and how I realized for a long time, that wasn't even like an option. It wasn't even like a tool in my toolbox, you know, you know what I mean? For the horse, it was just like, you know, just get busy doing something, which is fine too. Sometimes that is what they need, is to be busy, but sometimes they just need a moment, you know, to collect themselves just like we do. And then you can feel them take a deep breath, you know, like, oh, okay, I'm okay, you know, and then we can go back, try again, or whatever it is that's happening. But yeah, I just have found that to be kind of interesting, and like why it took me a little while to realize that, like, hey, if these little timeouts help me, you know, why wouldn't they help the horse too? You know, just like, okay, let's just go over in the corner and chill for a sec and, you know, get our thoughts together and calm ourselves down, and then go, you know, go back to work.
Right. And that makes so much sense as far as like when you witness a horse that has, you know, which we all have the scary end of one arena, you know, that, you know, you kind of maybe get busy or something, and then you're trying to give them more rest at the scarier spot of the arena, or like putting all of your stuff like at the scary end of the arena, so that when you go and you like take a phone call, or you go and you know, drink from your water bottle or whatever, it's where it's giving them a minute, you know, to like go back inside their body and be in the moment and not just reacting. And so, yeah, that kind of makes me think of the timeout situation, you know, where you let that be your timeout, you know, and chill. But how many of us, or even our students, will be like, they're scared of that. Let's go right to the thing that they're really scared of, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Horse feel the best, you know?
Yeah. It's kind of a rhythm thing too. Like when you were describing like the different numbers, did you say it's 7 is what you are, Alicia?
Nine. Okay. I was trying to find the other ones that were on there, because I'm like, I'm a 9, but I can also blur into a 6 and a 4. So I have like, you know, which everybody, I guess, has, you know, some differences, and you're not going to just be a set solid one number, but one that you're more, you know, higher percentage.
What is the scale there? Like what, I don't know, like what a 9 means,
oh,
you know,
gosh.
What I mean?
Well,
like
number the peacemaker. And then there's like loyalist, okay. And there's all these different ones, which again, I wish Michelle, she should be talking about this instead of me, but, but you know, that it goes through and it breaks down like all the different types of people that are out there. And then there's all these, you know, explanations of all the types of situations that, you know, bring up ways that you would feel insecure, or you would feel threatened, or any of that sort of stuff. And so, yeah, the test, I mean, I thought it was really interesting. It was like 144 questions, and, you know, it took me about a half an hour to do, but I would say it's pretty spot on. When I read it, I was like, oh yeah, that's definitely
cool. That's cool.
Yeah.
I read a book a couple of years ago.
No, go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No, sorry.
I read a book a couple of years ago called The Highly Sensitive Person. And it's just like kind of a, it's kind of about the same sort of thing. Like when you're sensitive to things, like the way your body naturally reacts in response to stimulus, basically, whether it's crowds of people or whatever your sensitivities, whatever sends them into like overdrive. And it kind of goes into explaining like why that is, which then help, it does help just knowing the why, like Alicia's saying, being able to understand like where you are, which kind of person you are, then does give you more understanding and of the tools that you would use to then help yourself in those situations, right? When you're overstimulated. It was good. It was a good book. And it was interesting read about that kind of thing, you know, well, and I think it relates. Yeah. It's what, like the highly sensitive person. I'll have to look. It's like the highly sensitive person. I don't know if I still have it over here. Either way, I'll find it. And oh yeah, right here. Yeah. The highly sensitive person.
Oh, cool.
Okay, cool.
I'll check it out for sure.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, it's by PhD. Yeah, it's How to Thrive When the World Overwhelms You is the subtitle, you know. But it is really interesting. Yeah.
Gosh, tell me about that sooner, Brooke. I mean,
it's funny.
She was hoarding. She was hoarding it.
No, I gave it, or I did tell a student of mine who's not a nervous rider at all, but she is a very sensitive person, and she's like me, introvert, and like she I always have felt this way about myself, and she felt the same way about herself. Like when you're kind of like that, every time you're around people, it's not always that you're like nervous or whatever, but you just feel like super awkward, you know, unless you're around like your good friends, and you know, you're just, I feel awkward in social situations, and she's the same way. So I had told her about it, but I guess, I don't know why I never said anything to anybody else, but it's good. So check it out.
everyone thinks I'm an extrovert because I appear that way, but I'm actually like super nerdy introvert. So whenever I want to recharge, I'm like a reclusive cat under the bed with toys, like get away from me. And I have this thing where I can be weirdly socially awkward. I finally realized it about 5 years ago. I had a group, I mean, of the nicest women who were all parents of a school group that Lope was working with, and they wanted to do a fundraiser for us. So I did a little horsemanship demo, but before that they came and they took over my kitchen, and I'm not domestic at all. They took over my kitchen because they wanted to do a big dinner, and they had invited people. And I mean, these women just came and took over the kitchen, and I was in my horse gear, and they started asking me all these questions about where were utensils, that I had no idea even what those utensils were. I'm like, oh, that's a multi-syllable word for a spoon. I'm out. And then they're just being normal social group of women. Okay. And I fled the house. I went out into the porch, and my husband's a good cook. I just pushed him in. I'm like, I can't. And I was out there on the porch, and I'm like, you know, I think I might be poorly socialized. It was the first time that actually occurred to me, but I mean, I just froze like a deer in the headlights, you know? And so I have this weird thing. Like I said, like I'm in certain, I can teach, I can do group things. When I wrote the book, I did like radio interviews. I did all kinds of things, and that's all fine. But then there are these certain lines where it becomes painfully evident just what an introverted dork I am. And so I have to be like, or I almost need like translation sheets or something. This is how you talk to people in this situation. So yeah. I know exactly what that means, you know? I mean, it's just really, I was very, very shy and introverted as a child, which also no one believes, but it's true. I was very quiet. And I just remember having these painfully like sensitive episodes, like what you're talking about, Brooke, where certain kinds of just interactions in school or whatever, and I would just be like so embarrassed about everything, like breathing even. I was just like, I did it wrong. I was so self-conscious. So anyway, I've got to get that book. It sounds like a great book.
Yeah, it does.
It is.
And I do.
It does go through a lot of that stuff. Yeah, because I feel the same way. Like you
Thank
never, I don't know, stressful because you know you're gonna feel awkward. So then you don't even want to go, and you know what I mean. It's a whole thing. But that's off topic a
Yeah,
little
no,
bit.
but
Sorry,
it's
Alicia.
not.
What?
Yeah, but it's not. Yeah, Alicia, what do you have to say?
No, I don't think it's off topic at all because I do think that I mean, I think all three of us are similar in that way that I'm like you can be an introvert having to work in an extroverted environment where you need to be able to be vocal and you need, and how that takes a while to learn how to do it. But once you get the rhythm of it and you learn that, you can do it and then you're on and, but in order to recharge, oftentimes like I have to definitely spend a lot of alone time to, otherwise I actually make myself sick. Like I will get a cold or I'll get run down. Because I'm living in a environment that I don't feel like is a very natural thing for me. Like if I could be in the middle of a 500,000 acre field by myself, I'd be just fine, but that's not reality. Like every day it's a lot of people, it's a lot of talking, a lot of, phone calls and conversations and helping people when they're feeling lost or stuck or struggle, so you're just always on and then start to feel run down. And so I admire people who can just go and go and go, and they don't need to recharge. I mean, it's like, whoa, how do you do that?
I know. I have a friend who's an extrovert, and I mean, she is not happy unless she's in a crowd of people. That's where she goes to recharge. And I'm just like, how do you breathe? And I'm the opposite. Like we're heading to the opposite doors. I'm going out, and she's going in to the party. But that's what's so cool. And just tracking it back to what you started with, Alicia, like understanding like what our natural tendencies are. So if I were to force myself to always go out and be social, because that's what I should be doing to relax, I would be basically setting myself up for failure. Not because it's better or worse to be an introvert or an extrovert, but to understand that about yourself is really important. And then that also tracks with how you might work with a horse, what kind of horse might be better for you. It isn't paint by numbers, it's not engineering, it's just like understanding kind of chemistry a little bit. And chemistry is never 100% predictable. There's little overlaps, like you were saying, there's blurred lines between some of the test results, right? Like you're in these kind of zones. But you wouldn't want to have a partner, whether it's a horse or human or a boss, who is so wildly different from you that you can't communicate at all. Like there's no natural click there. I feel like that can be a really important thing, in overcoming nervousness, but also in choosing the right horse and people to be with. I mean, that's why I started the podcast, was to be with the right people who I could learn from, I could improve, but also to help me see what the best kind of presence is that I would like to one day project. It's important.
Okay, now
Yeah,
I know I'm a peacemaker, but I'm fixing to open this window here because these girls need me to rein them in, or these horses
okay. It
are
sounds like
yeah.
giggling and ripping back and forth, and they're having a ball on the horses, but these are things they don't out like,
And let's use this as the end of the podcast because I think
Yeah.
that's perfect. We're at an hour, and that's basically the kid timeout zone anyway. So let's let you go. And thank you guys for talking about this. It was great, and I think we'll definitely do a follow-up with your friend Alicia. That would be so cool.
She would love it, and you would love her. She's just a wealth of knowledge, and she's been a really good friend to me too. And I just think everybody could benefit from, meeting Michelle. So
That sounds great. Well, take care. Good luck in, with your intervention. So,
thank you, you guys.
Bye.
Thank
you. Good to see you. Bye. Bye.
For those of you who are wondering, Alicia does these podcast episodes while she's watching her kid ride with other kids. So the intervention was indeed successful, I'm happy to report, and all was calm within a few minutes after the episode ending. Stay tuned for a follow-up episode on this topic in which I hope to interview Alicia's friend, Michelle. As always, thank you for listening, and I hope you have a wonderful day.